the chance to pray or to preach. It was for the 26th of this month, and then a couple weeks ago he said, "Hey, I've lost my speaker for the 12th. Can you pray or preach this day?" And I said, "Sure, I think I'm ready. I've been working on this for some time." And so he's moved me up, and hopefully I still get the 26th too. Preaching, just so much fun. I hadn't chosen what I was going to preach on, and Delbert was wanting something in concrete before too long, and so I said, "Hey, do you have any suggestions?" And he gave me two different suggestions, and one suggestion involved two things from the Sermon on the Mount, and the other one was from Romans. I chose one of those from the Sermon on the Mount. You see, a few years back, Delbert suggested that we choose a verse or two and just focus on it for a while. Well, I took a longer section. I've chosen to focus on the Sermon on the Mount, and I've been studying and spending a lot of time with the Sermon on the Mount over the last several years, and I find it fascinating. However, sometimes just because you find something fascinating doesn't mean that you're paying all the attention you should. Darwin, when he created his theory of evolution, thought that the cell was just this little blob of goo, and so it could easily morph into other things. Darwin didn't have the opportunity to see the cell the way we can see the cell now. And so he didn't understand the complexity of the cell, and he didn't know about DNA, he didn't know about proteins, he didn't know about amino acids, he didn't know about all the fancy little things that God has put into that cell that just can't be there by accident. Well, Darwin couldn't look deeply enough, and so he made some huge mistakes. I've been a Christian now since April 13th, 1958, 60 years this year, and 4 months tomorrow. I've read the Bible through several times. I've lost count on how many times. I've studied the Sermon on the Mount in detail for some time, and it was just after Delbert suggested that I look at one particular verse that I've discovered a new treasure. How many of you have looked at the Bible Project online? There's a few people. I suggest you take some time, go online and just Google the Bible Project. One of the people doing the Bible Project is a man by the name of Tim Mackey, and he made the following observation in one of his sermons. "When you come to a part of the Bible you are already familiar with, you are in danger because you think you already know what is happening. And so, you are less likely to be expecting to hear anything new." This is what happened to me when I was reading the Sermon on the Mount those many, many times. The verse that Delbert suggested, he suggested two different verses, but the one he started with was Matthew chapter 5, verse 3. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And then he skipped down and had, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for for they will be satisfied. I started looking at the blessed are the poor in spirit. I started looking at that more and more. And I thought, wow, this is rich. This is so rich that why didn't I see this before? And so I'm just concentrating on that verse today. I find that if I understand that verse, it opens a lot of the rest of the Sermon on the Mount, a lot of the rest of what Jesus talked about, especially in the book of Matthew, and even through the whole Bible, the whole New Testament especially, you catch what is being said much more clearly by comprehending what is said in just this one verse. Now, it should have been obvious that this verse is of great importance. A speaker as skilled as Jesus isn't going to start with trash trivia and nonsense. The way you start a sermon can either catch everybody or lose everybody. If you start with something that just does not interest anybody, you might as well go home. Jesus started with something that must have hit that culture like a sledgehammer. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, isn't that a contrast? Isn't that blessed? The word means happy. The actual Greek word here means happy are the poor in spirit. That doesn't make sense. Now, think about the culture. The culture by this time had a concept. We see this reflected in Jesus talking about the rich young ruler, give up everything, give to the poor, come follow me. He takes off, and he said, it's hard for a rich man to be saved. And the apostles said, who can be saved then? See, the concept of the day is that if you are righteous, you will become rich. And so when Jesus puts this contrast, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, it's a do not compute statement to the people. And it's something that caught their attention. And they stuck with. So the first word, blessed, better translated, happy, but we've got tradition to follow, so it's blessed in most of our Bibles. Poor, what does the term poor mean? Well, actually, in Greek, there are two different words for poor. Now, I didn't write them down. I'm not going to try to do Greek up here today. One is poor, like generally poor, a person who can go out and earn a living, but he's, you know, not of the upper class. He might be a day laborer. He might even be picking up cans for a living in our culture. A poor person, not rich, poor. We all know people like this. We have people in that class of poor that are part of us. And that's, you know, that's part of the understanding there. But Jesus uses a different word for poor here. And it's only used a few places in the Bible. Nice thing about a computer is I don't have to flip through the pages and get everything every time. I can print it out ahead of time so that it's easy to read. I'm going to read talking about a poor man that uses this same word for poor in the Greek. There was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and who feasted sumptuously every day. This is in Luke chapter 16, starting with verse 19. And at his gate was laid a poor man, same word for poor, named Lazarus, covered with sores, who desired to be fed from what fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, even the dogs came and licked his sores. You know the rest of that story, how they both died. My focus is not on that, but it's on the state of poor. We have a beggar. We have somebody who can't even get himself to the rich man's gate to beg. Somebody has to bring him. So we're looking at somebody who's crippled. We are looking at somebody who doesn't have maybe the intellectual capacity to be a bookkeeper at this time. He's just down and out, destitute, poor. Blessed are the destitute in spirit. Happy are the destitute in spirit. Are we destitute? We spend a lot of time trying to focus on how to be holy people, and we look, you know, how to be a better person. The first thing we need to do is learn to be destitute before God. I used to, when I was doing counseling for on a regular basis, I had a woman that had been involved with a lot of shady things in life. She had been involved with a biker, and she, well, just say she was not a fine, upstanding citizen. And she kept saying, you know, I have been so evil, God could not even accept me. I'm that bad. She was destitute in spirit. I kept saying, that is the first step. We have to realize we're all that bad before God can accept us. About 2 years ago now, I didn't write down the date or anything. She saw me in Walmart and came up and said, you know, I've come to the realization that God can accept me. A big move for her. I wish I could be there spiritually coaching her, but we're, you know, different circles now. So, blessed are the destitute in spirit. Now, the next part is, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. What is the kingdom of heaven? Most of us have this kind of an idea of harps and clouds, white robes and halos. We have jokes about getting into heaven. If any of you are blonde, I'm going to apologize now. I have a niece who is blonde, and this joke has more to do with the theology in it at this time, but the joke goes something like this. A blonde died and went to heaven. She met Peter at the gate, and Peter says, we've had our quota of blondes. You can't come in. And she says, but I've been good. And he says, no, we've had our quota of blondes. But she keeps begging. And Peter says, okay, I'll let you in if you can tell me how many D's are in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But she goes away. She says, I'll have to think about that. She goes away and comes back. And she says, 148. And by the way, I went and counted them to find out. 148. And Peter says, what? And she says, yeah, 148. What? Yeah, you know, dee 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 dee. Now, my blonde niece said, I don't get it. The stinking theology in that is that the blonde says, I've been good. I should get into heaven. You follow me? When we go to heaven, when we stand before our King, the last thing we should say is, I've been good. Why? Why would Jesus want us to be destitute in spirit if we're to get into the kingdom of heaven? Oh, go back. What is the kingdom of heaven? We're not talking on clouds up in the sky. We're talking where God reigns. Now, if you study long enough looking at where God reigns, you'll go back and find clear back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 28, he's talking about the ruler of the universe telling man that he's going to rule over the animals. That's our first talk of reign. We are under God's reign on this earth. They were in Eden at the time, and to take care of God's territory for him. They were stewards under God's reign. Of course, we had rebellion, and what was turned over for us for stewardship, we promptly gave to the enemy. And then the whole talk of the whole Old Testament is God giving opportunity for his reign to be reestablished on earth. We look at Abraham. Well, up to Noah, everything got worse and worse, except for one bright spot, and the guy named the name of Enoch. And then after Noah, we come up to Abraham. I'm going to reestablish my reign on earth through you, Abraham. Why? Because you believed me. And therefore, I will count that as righteousness. And Abraham follows God, not perfectly, but he follows God, and then down through his lineage, and then we see the children of Israel. God's going to reestablish his reign, Moses to bring the kingdom, and that again goes bad. And then David, thank you. By the way, I had, that is one of my scriptures, one of those verses that's on my piece of paper here. David, and we know what happened with David, and then Solomon in his beautiful kingdom, God's kingdom here on earth. And what's he do? Well, he got a few too many wives, and his wives led his heart astray. And on through the Old Testament, God just says, hey, this ain't going to work. Off to Babylon with a lot of you. And then we have Jesus coming back, and he's going to reestablish God's reign. Larry, was it last week or the week before? Matthew 4:17. Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. At hand. It's almost here. And Jesus, by the way, the book of Matthew refers to the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God over 50 times. That is a theme in the book of Matthew. A big theme in the book of Matthew. So when we're looking at this, we have to understand this is God's reign being established. And it's going to be established with whom? The destitute in spirit. When I was studying the book, the Sermon on the Mount, and then I read it through again with destitute in spirit in mind, I have a whole bunch of new things that I'm seeing. Areas that it sheds light on murder. Blessed are the destitute in spirit. And then what's he say about murder? You have heard that it was said for those of old, you shall not murder. But I say to you, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you, everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. How many of us can say guilty as charged? Now, your girls can't because they don't have brothers. But we got the concept. We've all been angry with someone. How about adultery? Whoever looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. How many of us have ever had impure thoughts about another person? You don't have to raise your hands. I know. How about forgiveness? How many of us forgive as Christ forgives? Giving. He talks about giving and how we should give so that we're not praised for it. I know sometimes there's part of me that wants to be noticed. And he says, nope, that one don't count. A prayer. There was a while that I wouldn't pray in public because I wanted to have people praise me, and I knew I was in the wrong. Fasting. There was even in the thing from Luke that I read, I fast twice a week. Notice me, pay attention to me, I'm so good. Treatment of others, anxiety, judging, selfishness, materialism. We can go on and on and on the stuff that it opens up when we understand what Jesus is talking about being poor in spirit before we approach him. Now, right at the end of the book of Matthew, or not book of Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount, there is a portion where Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do mighty works in your name? Now, I have to ask a question. And by the way, that goes on to say, you're out. Paraphrase there. But the thing that Jesus is pointing out there is that these, when you read it in terms of that starting verse, blessed are the destitute of spirit. When you read it in the light of that, you say, oh, I understand. It had to do with the fact that they thought they could earn their way. Worship team. We cannot earn our way to heaven, no way, no how. Now, it doesn't mean that we should disregard the verses that say, be holy because I am holy. It doesn't mean that we should say, well, I can't earn my way, I'm just going to live like the devil. But it means that when I stand before the throne of Christ, or when I go to him in prayer, I see him for who he is and me in relationship to that. You know, this term destitute is used one other place in the New Testament. And it's used I just found this last night. I keep looking at this more and more and more, and I find more and more here. Second Corinthians 8:9. And this is in a section about giving. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for our sake he became poor, so that you, by his poverty, might become rich. That poor there is destitute. Now, if I approach God with the attitude that, look how good I've been, look what I've done for you. If I approach God with that attitude, I have the wrong attitude. God has already dealt with that attitude once in heaven, and it caused a war. And it says about a third of the angels were kicked out. You know what I'm referring to. I think God does not want his kingdom to have that attitude in it. We need to know who God is, and we are who we are in relationship to him. He is king. He is Lord. There is no other. It's not a democracy. When we stand in his presence, let's start on our faces before him, recognizing who he is and who we are in that relationship. Let us be destitute before God so that he can stand us and lift up the fallen as is his custom. Thank you.